It is April the 30th, and joining us on a remote talk shop this Thursday morning is Brian and Paul from the CHP in Arcata.
Good morning, Mr. Paul.
Thanks for having me remotely.
Yeah. Some say that's the best way. I'm not sure, but that's okay. Oh, boy. Alrighty, Winston, make us feel stupid.
Poker. How did the game of poker get its name?
Now, wait a minute, Paul. You play poker, right?
Not very well, but I've lost a fair amount of money. I'm going to guess that somebody was sitting around a fire when it started and you poked the fire as you played poker.
A fireplace poker.
I'm going pretty literal on this.
Yeah, I sense subterfuge is in full effect. Poker. I have no idea.
The game is German in origin and gets its name from the German Pochen, meaning to boast or brag. But the game seems to have been introduced into this country through New Orleans, where, due to its similarity to the French game of poke, it acquired that name. Southern gentlemen who played the game, but were untutored in French pronunciation, gave it just two syllables, poke-a. Northerners who learned the game quite obviously deduced that, therefore, it was spelled that way.
So it's related somehow to Del Norte, then. We just Americanized it. And you know, I'm even going to let you slide here, Paul, on not knowing something that is New Orleans in source.
Do you know what I played in college growing up was a card game called Bure, which was like a French five-card spades game. That's what I learned.
Three because it's easier to count than five?
Absolutely.
Speaking of easier, I would suspect that it's probably a little bit easier for our sworn highway patrol to be able to recognize people traveling under the influence, driving erratically, that kind of stuff. Has that been the case during this period where the traffic has been so significantly reduced due to the shelter in place edict?
It absolutely has. We just recently put out a press release pertaining to speed, particularly driving over 100, and the awareness of Caltrans and other workers out on the road, the dangers of those speeds. And having talked to some of our officers, trying to see what's going on out in the field, there's an increase of daytime DUI arrests. And we're also seeing higher numbers for speeding tickets for people going over 100 miles an hour. You know, I have done a couple of Facebook posts in the last, you know, month and a half or 2 months since this all kind of started, focusing on two particular drivers and, you know, doing the little picture of the ticket with the speed and all that. And they seem to get very positive comments and lots of views, which shows the importance of that in this area. I went back through some of the records just trying to get a rough idea of the number. So we've seen a huge increase statewide in the number of 100-mile-an-hour plus tickets. And here locally, in the last month and a half or so, just some of the tickets haven't been all entered. But we have had four in, let's say, the last 6 weeks, compared to 10 total over the last year. So almost half of the tickets we've had in the last year have been in the last 5-6 weeks. So I think that's pretty indicative of what we're seeing. Some of that is just because of, I think probably has a lot to do with the fact there's fewer cars on the road. We have the same number of officers out. It obviously makes it a little easier for us to identify the errant drivers on the road, get them off the road, so they become more visible for sure.
Yeah, I would think that it would be tough to miss somebody going that quick. Is it a trained eye kind of thing, or is it just as obvious as what it would appear that it ought to be?
Yeah, no, it's a combination of our training and then the use of the equipment that we have. So part of speed enforcement for an officer is to maintain a yearly certification or recertification on speed enforcement. So that involves retaking a yearly test on the basic knowledge of the equipment and functions of the radar and proper technique for identifying speeders and speeding vehicles, and that yearly certification stays in the record. It also, they have an instructor that verifies their ability to visually estimate a vehicle speed, and then it has to be confirmed with the radar that their ability to estimate those speeds. So every officer maintains that.
I would think that it would be difficult to develop proficiencies at recognizing the difference between 90 and 100 miles an hour, just because it doesn't happen that often.
I think up here you're probably correct. We do have, you know, limited places where those speeds can be achieved. You know, we don't have a lot of straight line driving out here, but there is enough that makes it dangerous. Like, you know, that Humboldt Hill area south from there has a couple of spots, but particularly in coming down the hill, coming into Beatrice Flats across that way, you go up 299. The difficulty with us being able to enforce it probably as much as we do observe it, like, I imagine that the officers are seeing more than what we have tickets issued for, because of the fact that we can't turn around at every location. So I may be coming head on to a vehicle in the opposite lane, but I'm not able to turn around on it because of the barriers in between the north and southbound or east and west lanes. So you still, you also have to be at the right place to be able to make that enforcement.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and
last segment, we were talking about the increased numbers of people driving 100 miles an hour. Never having done that, I don't know, have you had the opportunity to do that, like on a Air Force base or something where there's plenty of space to be able to determine what the differences are as far as reaction time and handling and all those different challenges at that speed?
Yeah, you know, I worked, spent about 9 months working in our Barstow area office, and you know, there's quite a bit of straight line driving through the desert out there. You get a call. I've had to drive for probably an hour at 130 miles an hour the entire way, and you lose that perception of how fast you're going, in particular there when you don't have points of reference that are zipping by you. You kind of lose track of how fast you're going. That being said, I know, you know, there's formulas, and if you get online and it's easy to Google and look up, it's not committed to memory, but the higher your speed increases, the less reaction time you have, the more time it's going to take you to stop, the longer your stopping distance is, and it starts to get shorter and shorter the faster you go. So say the difference between going 50 and 60 may not be that great as far as stopping distance goes, but then as you increase another 10 miles an hour, that reaction time or that stopping distance is going to get much incrementally larger, if that makes sense. So going 100 miles an hour without working out the numbers on there it's going to be near impossible to stop if a deer runs out in the road, if a car pulls out in front of you. And at those speeds, it's very difficult to survive a collision at that speed. I've seen those happen in the desert. In that short time I worked there, I worked a number of crashes. They're all covering sometimes 100 yards, 150 yards of debris that's spread out down the freeway. You don't stop very fast, and the forces are definitely working against you at that point. Here we have the added dangers of every tree on the side of the road, the rocks falling down the side of the hill. It's much more to worry about than driving 100 miles an hour through the desert. And not only that, but you're not maintaining. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, if you're not maintaining your own vehicle and you're not aware of the condition of your vehicle, it just takes a nail or a tack in the road to start deflating that tire, worn-out tread, where a slight movement of your steering wheel could cause you to lose that friction between your wheel and the roadway and lose control. Blown-out tire, we've lost officers due to those reasons. A blowout at a high speed, chasing down a speeder, or responding to a call and not surviving. So it's with first-hand knowledge that I know the dangers of that.
Yeah, I would think the debris factor would be significant in our area also, because you've got the stuff that you were alluding to, the branches and the rocks and all that kind of stuff, but we've also got mold and the inside turn ice, things like that that may not be that visible, but they certainly would impact the amount of friction or the stickiness, if you will, of the vehicle's tire on the pavement.
Oh, yeah. Well, you and I have talked about it before with the first rains of the year, or if we get like the slightest amount of hail, that area on 101 right at our office, the Samoa exit, every time that happens, there's a pileup of cars right there. That's a straight line segment. No particular reason that vehicles should be losing control there, but the last several years, I see it every time there's a little bit of hail or it starts to rain. So, you know, that's not even in a curvy road or a mountainous road with debris falling everywhere. So add in those extra elements and the dangers are significantly increased.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think anybody's seen that also, depending on what kind of rig that you're driving. I had the chance a number of years ago now to get into an 800 series BMW. And it was like, you know, you're feeling like you're going 40, but in fact, I think she was going about 85. It slowed it down really quickly, but it's amazing how some of the vehicles are better suited for different speeds and then designed for that too. So, you know, you get like a Celica or, you know, a regular guy kind of car out there going that kind of speed. You're right. Things can just go sideways really quickly.
Yeah, not every car is designed for those high speeds. That's for sure.
Now, what about the pursuit? When you're on the road and there's something like that, I know there's that you break it off because of public safety concerns and of that nature. But let's go back down to Barstow on 5. I mean, you know, if there's nobody else around, how long will you chase somebody like that?
Every pursuit is monitored by supervisors. The officer themselves has the ability to cancel the pursuit at any time. And each one is unique in several different ways. So we have to consider what the original violation was that was observed. Do we know who the driver is, where we could identify them and file charges against them at a later time? In particular, you know, if it was a felony or someone was hurt, killed, injured seriously, we have to take those things into consideration. Where the pursuit is happening at, if I'm chasing somebody in the corridor, but it's in the middle of the night, there's no other traffic on the road, I may still reconsider whether I'm going to chase one or not as I enter Eureka. I know that there's other hazards with side streets and pedestrians, and we have to take all those things into consideration, the weather at the time. And ultimately, the supervisor can call off a pursuit at any point. We try to get an airship involved, if at all possible, but you know, our helicopter or airplane comes from Redding, so that's not always possible unless they happen to be close by or doing some work.
Right, or going towards Redding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. JIS, but, News and Information Time. We'll continue this when we come back at the
yeah.
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with California Highway Patrol Public Information Officer Paul Kraft. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, REDEC, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Paul, we're talking about speed and how the different challenges are involved there. But what about under the influence? Are they similar concerns, or is it a whole different set of reference points when you are either pursuing or observing people driving under the influence?
Yeah, I think in most cases, it's hard to really tell if someone might be impaired prior to us making that stop or getting them stopped. People make their driving behavior decisions so for different reasons. It could be somebody just wanting to get away for some crime they committed. Maybe they just have a suspended, all too often, and I see it run because they have a suspended license, which would incur nothing more than sometimes maybe a ticket and get their car towed. Sometimes we release the car to another party like the registered owner. It could be way less serious, but they still run. And ultimately, I don't think we ever really know if someone's impaired until we come to the conclusion of that pursuit. But I think alcohol and drugs definitely play a part in decision-making. So I couldn't really say what percentage of pursued suspects end up being impaired, but that would be an interesting set of statistics to see, though.
Now, have you seen any kind of an uptick in driving under the influence in our area as well? I know in the opening you were talking about a number of areas that you were seeing, speed being one of the primary ones. The under the influence, are you seeing a similar increase in that area?
Yeah, so I've been in and out of the office in the last few weeks and assisting at the Humboldt County Operations, Emergency Operations Center. So I haven't been in the office completely in recent weeks. However, keeping an eye on our daily logs, I am definitely seeing an increase in daytime DUIs, but I don't know what the numbers are for the overnight arrests, what the numbers are like, but definitely seeing an increase in daytime DUI arrests. Now, whether that means there's more impaired drivers on the road, or is it because we're able to more easily observe an impaired driver and see distinct driving behavior that leads to a stop? I don't know which one of those is a factor or if it's both. Either way, we're getting impaired drivers off the road, so I don't think that it matters that much why, but the fact is that we're getting them off the road, and that's a huge, huge thing right now.
Yeah, I would suspect that. Yeah, I forget who it was, but somebody who was in your chair about a decade or so ago had indicated that after 6 o'clock, about 10% of all traffic out on the highway is impaired to one extent or another. Okay.
I think I've heard a similar stat.
Yeah. So it would be interesting. I'd never thought that daytime would hardly even exist unless you're in a community where there's a lot of shift workers, say they're getting off at 2 in the afternoon or at 10 in the morning, that daytime DUI would even be a factor. It's significant enough one to even track, but it sounds like it is for you guys, that's something that's more common than a lot of us would anticipate.
Yeah, you know, Brian, it's easy to, what's the word I'm looking for, generalize who is, or even stereotype, maybe even a good word, who it is that's impaired, not just drinking, but using some type of either over-the-counter medication or non-prescription drugs. I would love to take, you know, my last almost 15 years now of work, go through all the DUI arrests and tell you a story about each one, because it really has, and you can talk to any officer and tell you the same thing. It's from every background, race, religion, status in our community, status in society. It runs the gamut. So there's not a pigeonhole to one particular person or a group of people that are doing it. From a college professor at a college down south to, you know, an unemployed worker here in the county. I mean, it could be anybody at any given time, because sometimes we make a mistake. I would never judge that everyone that's ever been arrested for DUI is the worst person in the world, but sometimes human beings make mistakes. Unfortunately, those mistakes can lead to a death or serious injury to someone, so we're trying to prevent that. But not to belittle or minimize the seriousness of impaired driving by any means, but it's something to recover from, to learn from. And I think by taking other people's stories and educating the public on it, fewer people will make that mistake. So,
Well, the prescription drugs kind of throws it into a whole different arena. I mean, you know, the guy going to the bar and having five or six drinks. Okay, you know, that's one thing. Or somebody finishing off or opening and completing a bottle of wine or a liquor. Okay, I mean, that is pretty straightforward. But the prescriptive drugs is an area that's kind of interesting, because, yeah, it says don't operate, you know, a vehicle. Okay, but most of us don't know that we're impaired that small percent. Is it those degrees? Is it the abuse of prescription drugs? When you say prescriptions, how does that play?
Well, so there are a number of prescriptions that alone should not be taken before operating a motor vehicle. But then you have that one drink with dinner that may be okay, that alone wouldn't impair you. And the medication alone maybe didn't impair you. But when you combine them, those effects can be really scary. And I immediately think back to, you know, we've had nights, a lot of our officers have had a night or a day where we arrest multiple people in the car at the same time, where maybe we have someone under arrest in the car and we have to make another stop and route to the jail and arrest someone else. And I think of a particular night where I actually had a drunk driver in the backseat of the car. He'd been at the bars for who knows how long, middle-aged male, and I almost got T-boned by an older female driver who takes prescription medication, but she had a glass of wine at a dinner event just before my contact with her. And so I have those two very different people in the back seat of my car under arrest for the same violation of impaired driving. And just that incident alone.
Yeah. What kind of weird stories are out there? I guess it takes a cop to see some of that stuff. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. Final couple minutes this month. Whoa, month is gone. We're joined with Talk Shop this morning with Paul Kraft. Paul, some of the different challenges that are out there, you know, with the shelter in place, with the lack of traffic that's going on, with the lack of numbers that our area is having reporting, is it making life a little bit easier for the officer out on patrol, or is it making... are circumstances making things still as challenging as they were 2-3 weeks ago?
No, by the sheer nature of the lower volume of traffic, I think overall it's been less work for the officers. They're still out there, but it really gives them more time to be proactive. Although we're not I won't say we're not stopping violators, but we're looking for more egregious violations, which in turn has led to us being able to find more impaired drivers out on the road, citing the 100-mile-an-hour plus drivers. It has allowed more time to be out and be visible and do those things. But the added part of everything else going on is our officers have had to spend more time at the beginning and end of their shift at the office and sanitizing their equipment, the vehicles, and preparing them for the next officer to take out and utilize. So there's been that added amount of work that has been going into the day.
So there's obviously a lot of practicing that is going on, a lot of more processing in association with that. But as far as when the guys are out on the road, it kind of brings a little bit more normalcy, huh?
Yeah, it does. Focusing more on report writing and maybe putting more into a hit and run than they were able to do before, as far as follow-up investigation, which may have been limited by the fact that they had numerous other calls to respond to. And now there may be a little bit of extra time to put into those kinds of things. Abandoned vehicles and reckless driving complaints during certain times of the day and locations. So now an officer might be able to go sit out somewhere and look for those things and help out some of the neighborhoods.
Well, it's nice to know that it's a little bit easier on the troops, because I know that there are a lot of pressures and fatigue that you guys are dealing with also. Appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you.
All righty.
Appreciate it.
Okay. See you everybody tomorrow.